Well, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of the Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here, not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have with us one of my favorite guests, Bill Federer from the St. Louis area. Bill, how are you today?
Dan, it's always an honor to be with you.
Well, now Bill, of course, ran for Congress a couple of times against some fellow named Dick Gephardt. And Dick Gephardt had to drop out of the congressional race because he's running for the presidency on the Democratic ticket. So that leaves the seat open, and Bill is running then for Congress. And, of course, he's a constitutionalist, he's a Christian, and hope and pray that he's going to get in there. But right today, we're not going to be talking about his political aspirations. We're going to be talking about another of the books he's written. And if you haven't read his book, America's God and Country, you really need to get that. This is really the classic book going into the quotations of our leaders and really what the people had to say about the Christian foundations of this country. And then, of course, we carry his books on George Washington Carver and on St. Nicholas and St. Patrick. And but today we're going to be talking about the Ten Commandments and their influence on American law. How did you happen to write this one, Bill?
Well, first of all, on the I just wanted to add, you'd mentioned my race against Gephardt. Gephardt can run for both president and Congress, but since I've run against him twice with two very expensive races for him, when he heard I was planning on running this time, he decided to give up on his congressional seat. So we went ahead and we pushed him out of Congress. Now we just got to push him out of his presidential aspirations.
All right, fine. Well, I mean, we could spend the whole hour just talking about the dirty tricks that this man has played and about the book he wrote about dirty tricks and really what a despicable character he is. But let's talk about something positive, and that's the Ten Commandments and their influence on American law.
Well, about 2 years ago, Matt Staver, he is the attorney that has the Liberty Counsel, which is a First Amendment legal defense firm where they defend people where, you know, for example, the ACLU sues and tells the school to, reduce the religious freedom, or somebody is told they can't pray in a certain setting or so forth, and he'll represent those people for free. And so Matt had been approached by the county of Mercer, Kentucky, and another county in Texas, and another one in Tennessee, where the ACLU was suing to remove the Ten Commandment monument that had been up on their, you know, courtroom and government grounds for years, and in many cases over 50 years. And so Matt came to me and asked me to go through all of my historical research. As you mentioned, you know, the book America's God and Country, and I have that on CD-ROM, too. And
we actually carry that CD-ROM. In fact, we carry a number of the things you put together, but go ahead.
Well, I didn't realize how much I'd put there, but I ended up putting a book worth of information together for him. I took each commandment individually and showed how it influenced American law, and he submitted it. I had to give a sworn, you know, affidavit, and had a notary sign it and so forth, and he used it as an expert witness testimony. And in
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Bill. We're going to have to bring in another station onto the network. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bill Federer, and of course we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Federer. And Bill is really one of my favorite guests. He's run for Congress twice against Dick Gephardt back there in St. Louis, and he's going to be running again, only not against Dick Gephardt, who's going to be running for the presidency. And of course, hopefully Bill is going to win, because he's really bases his beliefs on our Constitution and upon the Word of God. He's written a number of excellent books, and if you haven't yet read his book, America's God and Country, you need to. In fact, I can look up from where I sit here in front of the microphone, and I keep a copy right by me. Wonderful, wonderful quotations from our founding fathers, whether it be from Jefferson or from Benjamin Franklin or from George Washington or Madison or Monroe, all of these people, you know, about their relationship to our Lord. And you'll be fascinated to see what these people said, not what you're going to read in your textbooks, but what they really said. It's all on CD as well as on as in the book. And then, of course, we carry his book on Bill Federer's book on George Washington Carver and St. Patrick and St. Nicholas. And now we're talking about his book on the Ten Commandments, their influence on American law, which is really based upon his analysis of which was actually to be submitted as a court brief on all of the statements made by our founding fathers on the importance of the Ten Commandments, because the ACLU, that's the Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, is trying to actually take the Ten Commandments out of all of our institutions. Destroy the Ten Commandments, you destroy the foundation of American law. And that's what the ACLU really wants. They have another agenda, for they worship a different God. So pick up the story from there, Bill.
Well, just the overwhelming influence of the Ten Commandments, it's on Western civilization as a whole, and then on English common law, and then transferred to American law. The colonial constitutions and laws from Massachusetts and Connecticut on down, they actually had scripture verses behind every law, so that it would have Exodus or Deuteronomy right there in the law.
You know, it's amazing, Bill, with what we know about the Christian foundation of this country and its biblical foundation, that the churches of this country didn't rise up in their righteous indignation when, during the Second World War, when the attention of our people was focused on the tragedy of that conflict and the anti-war demonstrations, that they didn't stand up and say, look, you can't fight a war overseas for freedom and take our freedom away here. But that's exactly what happened, isn't it?
Well, it is. And, you know, here's some interesting quotes. Here's
Before you get into that, we're going to have to welcome on our last our station, and then we'll be all set to roll without further interruptions. All right, fine, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest, of course, is Bill Federer. We're talking about his book, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. Why don't you pick it up from there, Bill?
Well, here's a letter from John Adams to Thomas Jefferson in 1816. He said, "The Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount contain my religion." So evidently, the Ten Commandments influenced John Adams very much. Well, John Adams was the man that recommended Jefferson pen the Declaration. It was John Adams that recommended Washington be the commander of the Continental Army. It was John Adams who was the first vice president, served for 8 years under Washington, and John Adams was the second president, and John Adams' son was the sixth president. So here's one man that made a great impact on our country, and what did he say? He said, "The Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount contain my religion." Here's a speech that Harry S. Truman gave in 1950 to the Attorney General's Conference. He said, "The fundamental basis of this nation's laws was given to Moses on the Mount." So here's Harry S. Truman speaking at the Attorney General's Conference and saying the fundamental basis of our nation's laws was given to Moses on the Mount. He's talking about the Ten Commandments. And, you know, I put down some of the court decisions, and this book has them all in here. This is the case of Crocker versus Sorensen, West Virginia, 1983, U.S. District Court. The judge said the Ten Commandments have had an immeasurable effect on Anglo-American legal development. And then here is the U.S. Supreme Court, Stone versus Graham, 1980. This was Rehnquist that wrote it. He says, it is equally undeniable that the Ten Commandments have had a significant impact on the development of secular legal codes of the Western world. And what we put forth in this document, and I spell it out at the beginning, I said, now this is not a public policy recommendation. This is evidence that demonstrates that the Ten Commandments have indeed influenced American law. Now, the reason I said it's not a public policy recommendation is because you read some of these colonial laws that they based on the Bible, and I mean, there's one in Massachusetts where it says if anybody is found guilty of blasphemy, the punishment shall be death. So I don't want to be seen as advocating that. But they give the reasoning behind it. They say that this is one of the court cases in the 1800s. I go through in this book commandment by commandment, and so I'm sort of jumping ahead of myself right now. But the commandment, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain, that is the third commandment. And it, you think, well, why would that be important to our country? Well, the court decisions go on to say that if you take God's name in vain, you're destroying the sanctity of the oath. And the oath is how you get all offices of government to operate honestly, that you give the oath to become president, so help me God. To congressmen and senators, the oath is, so help me God. To tell truth in the court, it's to swear, tell truth, hold truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God. And if you're making fun or degrading God, then when that person gives that oath, so help me God, it means less. And so what these different court decisions said, that if you, use profane language, that you're in a sense pulling the rug out from underneath of all the different branches of our government. Again, this book is an actual legal citations, so that you can present this book in a court of law. And that's what it was written for the purpose of. Here's, for example, this was a Supreme Court case of Maine in 1921, State versus Mockins, 113A, it goes on and on. To curse God means to scoff at God. To use profanely insolent and reproachful language against him, this is one form of blasphemy under the authority of standard lexicographers. To contemptuously reproach God, his creation, government, final judgment of the world, Jesus Christ, the Holy Ghost, or the Holy Scriptures as contained in the canonical books of the Old and New Testament under the name of authority, because you swear into office upon what? You, so help me God, but you swear with your hand upon a Bible.
Well, you know, I think the thing that people have forgotten is that you can't have a free society with people who do not look to a higher authority than themselves. And it was John Adams who said, we have no government armed with power, capable of contending with human passions unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. In other words, you can have limited government and liberty as long as you have moral people. But when you destroy the morality of a nation, then of course you're going to have to be ruled by tyrants. And that was exactly what the gentleman from who founded the Quaker movement said. He said, those will not be ruled by God, will be ruled by tyrants. And this is why the ACLU and those who would have a dictatorship here, who really believe in the rule of an elite, want to destroy the religious foundation of our country. They knew what was going to happen when you took a God and prayer out of our school. You'd create a generation of people without any foundation. And, of course, this is exactly what's going on in America today. And that's why they want to get the Ten Commandments, any mention of any moral restraints. And, of course, you take out the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not do this, that, or the other thing. And then, of course, man becomes the ultimate determinant of what's right and wrong, which leads to moral anarchy, which leads to dictatorship. And they're not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. In the name of freedom, they intend to destroy all freedom.
Well, exactly. If they can create a chaotic situation, then people are willing to let go of all their rights and freedoms in order to have the order is restored. But on and on, this is the one case that goes on to say that taking God's name in vain is a willful and malicious attempt to lessen men's reverence of God by denying his existence. And goes on to explain how that, you know, here's a quote from Ronald Reagan. He said, "Without God, there is no prompting of the conscience." In other words, if you don't believe in God, then there is no afterlife. If there's no afterlife, then all there is this life. And so if you have opportunity to do something wrong and get away with it, you'd be a fool not to take advantage of that opportunity. And so there's no prompting of the conscience. There's no conscience if there's no God, because people can give in if they can do something and not get caught. But anyway, you know, I was talking to Hannon Collin. He's the committeeman in Chester County, Pennsylvania, again, where the ACLU has been suing to remove an 80-year-old Ten Commandment monument. They have actually forced the county to cover over the monument that's been engraved and hung on the county courthouse wall with a custom-made sheet of plastic that cost $2,000. And but anyway, Colin was talking to me. He says, "Well, Bill, I'm really good at defending how the last six commandments have influenced our laws. That's, you know, that thou shalt not steal or kill or rape or bear false witness or covet and so forth. But," he says, "I have trouble, you know, proving that the first four are necessary. And my research has shown that without the first four, the last six are powerless. The first four commandments are the ones that mention God. I'm the Lord thy God, I shall know God's before me. I shall not make unto myself any graven image. I shall not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Keep holy the Sabbath." And so if there is no God to honor, and that you'll have to face in another life, then why keep the last six? You know, what's the motivation to keep them?
Well, as long as you can get away with it. Of course, if you get caught, why, you know, it can be embarrassing, lying, stealing, things like that. But, of course, if you realize that even if you can't get away with them, God knows that. And you're going to have to face a judgment. You know, one of the biggest things that they've done in contemporary churches, changing the teaching of our churches, they've taken any fear of the God out. And, of course, you take away fear. If God is only love and never any judgment, then it is the ultimate triumph of evil. And it's clever how, by infiltrating our seminaries, they've taken any fear of judgment of God as we approach eternity out of the current religion. And then we wonder why we have officials at the highest level of our government or our corporations lying and stealing. And you can't believe a thing that comes out of the corporations today. They're accounting because, of course, they juggle everything around. And you know, they simply lie. But then who's to get after them?
Yeah, you're exactly right. That quote you gave at the beginning is so apropos, where John Adams said, "Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's totally inadequate for the government of any other." In other words, our government was designed to govern people who could govern themselves. And the more internal restraints the populace had, the less external restraints they needed. But if we strip away the internal restraints, people give in to their lusts and passions and all kinds of horrible things happen. What do? We cry out for the government to step in and restore law and order, and they do that by usurping our rights and freedoms.
We saw what happens when there is no reliance upon God in Baghdad when the government broke down. But we've seen the same thing here in America, you know, in New York City when the lights went out and there was no power and no police force. We saw that in the Rodney King riots when the police were told not to respond to the violence. And of course, it removed the requirement of people acting morally. And an awful lot of people won't act morally. And you end up with a rice and anarchy. And we're moving rapidly towards moral anarchy as the ACLU and all their friends within our court system and within the dark side of our government are doing everything they can to destroy the last foundations of freedom in this country.
Well, you know, back to the first commandment, is I'm the Lord thy God, thou shalt know the God before me. I think, well, why God? Well, we got God on our coins. That was put on there by Lincoln in 1865 in God We Trust. It was put on our paper currency in 1955 by Eisenhower. We have God as our national motto, and that was put in by in 1956 by an act of Congress in God We Trust. And then we have our national anthem, the fourth stanza of the Star Spangled Banner. It says, "In conquer we must, if our cause is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust."
We're going to have to interrupt you. We're going to have to go to a break. But I would just point out that they hardly ever sing that stanza of the Star Spangled Banner anymore. I wonder why that is. We'll be right back. This is Dr. Stan here, and I just want to mention that if you feel run down, if you feel that you need more energy, have you ever considered taking Be Alive Royal Jelly? Now, I've taken this for about 10 years on my own and along with my family. We've been very, very satisfied with it, and recently the Be Alive people approached us and asked if we'd like to have them sponsor us for a month. So we certainly agreed to that because we think it's a great product, and I think you will too. Let me suggest that you call 1-866-233-7500. That's 1-866-233-7500. The product is sold with a money-back guarantee. So give them a call at 1-866-233-7500 and simply ask to learn more about Be Alive Royal Jelly. I think that you'll be very, very satisfied with this product.
Hello, this is health journalist Bill Sardi, and there's no better time to establish a biological response kit in your home. In an age when we hear about biological threats, more common are cases of E. coli in our food, cryptosporidium in our tap water, and staph germs, viruses, and molds in our air conditioning systems. Why be a sitting duck and run to the doctor after you've got a problem? Why not take something to stay healthy, like Alamex, the all-new 100% pure Allicin garlic extract? You won't find Alamex in stores, but you'll find it by calling 866-405-4000. Alamex is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh crushed garlic. And guess what? It's odor-free. Call 866-405-4000. Hello.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and I just want to mention that if we did have any problems in America, if there should be a breakdown in society, and I hope there isn't, but certainly Tom Ridge and Dick Cheney keep insisting that we're going to have more in the way of terrorist attacks. I hope that you'd have some means of having drinkable water in your home. Well, one thing you can do is get yourself a big Berkey water filter. It's the basic design that's been used for missionaries for 150 years. It's a stainless steel container, filters about 2.5 gallons of water at a time, and of course the ceramic filters filter out the bacteria, and they filter out many of the various chemicals that are there. And the big Berkeys ordinarily run about $279. We offer them for $239 plus shipping. And if you buy it through us, you get one of the videos or one of the four tape sets that we have put together or produced. Now, I have to tell you that the big Berkey is not available in either California or Iowa. But if you'd like to get a big Berkey or learn more about it, you can go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Or simply call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM. Then if you're living in California and you need some sort of a water filtration system to have, this is really a water purifier more than filtration. It's called the Berkey Light. Now, you can get one much more expensive with lights on it, but you can get just a regular Berkey Light. It's clear, so you can actually see the water levels. They have the black Berkey filters, which really purify the water and do an amazing job of keeping it clean. But you have to replace those filters every 2, 3, or 4 years, depending upon how much water you actually use. If you'd like to know more about either the Berkey Light, which is $199, and you also get either a video or a four-tape set if you buy it through us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WARM, and you'd be amazed at how many people have them and thinks that they really are great. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Bill Federer, and we're talking about his book, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. That's The Ten Commandments by Bill Federer, and of course, if you would like to know more about it, you give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WARP. Well, Bill, of course, now you're telling us really how the very foundations of our society are related to the Ten Commandments. And, of course, what is the real rationale of the ACLU to want to destroy the religious foundation of this nation? Do they want us to be a totally secular society like, well, really like Iraq was? Iraq was a secular society. It wasn't a Mohammedan society. It was a secular society. And, of course, in a secular society like that, you almost have to have an authoritarian figure at the top, whether until the people realize it's a dictatorship or not. I mean, they had elections in Iraq all the time, and the only trouble was nobody ever ran against Saddam Hussein.
No, you're exactly right. And one of the things, when the Berlin Wall went down and they attempted democracy in Europe, I thought to myself, well, the first 9/10 of democracy is missing, and that's a Judeo-Christian populace, people that believe in internal restraint, therefore you can get by with less external restraint. It's like a scale. You're either going to be controlled from the inside or the outside. If the populace is believing, like John Adams said in the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount, which is what? It's basically do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If the whole country believed that, you wouldn't need any other laws. But if you strip away the totalitarian government, and yet the people don't have that internal law of doing unto others as you have them do unto you and so forth. That's why the mafia got such a big foothold immediately in the former Soviet Union countries. And the same thing in Iraq, that, you know, you pull down that strong totalitarian ruler. If the populace doesn't have these, internal restraints, then you're just releasing some chaos. But here's an interesting quote from President Eisenhower, and he's the 34th President of the United States. He said this in 1955 in a nationally broadcast address from an American Legion event. He said, "Without God, there could be no American form of government, nor an American way of life. Recognition of the Supreme Being is the first, the most basic expression of Americanism." So here we have Eisenhower saying that the most basic expression of Americanism is the recognition of a supreme being. And we have every one of the 43 presidents mention God in their inaugural address, and some of them in very strong Christian terms. You know, both Lincoln and William Henry Harrison and John Adams, they all mentioned Christianity by name in their inaugural address. All 50 state constitutions mentions God.
Okay, we're going to just go to Ben, who's calling in here, and try to get him in before the break. Ben, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, the gentleman, your guest there, very wise that he is. Thank you, Dr. Stan. He used the term, once again, Judeo-Christian. Now, according to my understanding of my biblical studies, the Jews and Christians, since the crucifixion, have hated each other. So am I wrong, or what is the term Judeo-Christian would say, if our government was in fact formed by Judeo-Christians, there were two segments of a so-called Christianity that hated each other. No wonder we're in the turmoil we're in, sir.
Am I
wrong?
I think you're wrong. Would you like to address that, Bill?
Please enlighten us.
All right, fine.
Thank you, sir.
A study was done by two different scholars that got their doctorate degrees, Donald Lutz, and it was printed in the American Journal of Political Science Review. Anyway, they looked at 15,000 writings of the men that wrote our Constitution. There were 55 men that spent 3 months writing our federal Constitution, and these 55 men wrote stuff throughout all their life, and so these guys read through all that extra stuff, and lo and behold, they found out that the most frequently quoted source by these 55 men was none other than the Bible. But you may ask, what book in the Bible? Well, the majority of the quotes were taken from Deuteronomy. And you think, Deuteronomy? What's that? Well, that's the book of laws. See, it only makes sense if they're writing laws for a nation that they go back and they look at the book of laws that was given in the Bible.
I'd just like to comment that we have a lot of Jewish supporters. Some of them are Messianic Jews, and some of them are believe in the Torah. They are Jewish, but they believe in freedom just as you and I do. There's a conscious effort to turn the Jew against the Christian and the Christian against the Jew, and to foment hatred. Divide and conquer is one of the oldest techniques in the world. and maybe sometime we could do a program on that. But remember, Christianity came out of the cradle of Judaism, and if it wasn't an Old Testament, there wouldn't be a New Testament proclaiming the coming of the Messiah. Now, most Jews do not recognize the Messiah, but that's neither here nor there. Without the Old Testament, which is Jewish, there would not be a New Testament, which is Christian. We'll be right back here with our special guest, Bill Federer, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just tell you about some of the items that we have here at Radio Liberty, which we hope that many of you will be interested in. First of all, let me mention that there is going to be a conspiracy conference. It's going to be held in the Santa Clara area at the Marriott Hotel, and it's going to be on the 24th and the 25th, and it's going to open at, I'm supposed to speak at 8:30 in the morning, so if you're going to come to hear me, be sure to get there early. And then, of course, I wish they hadn't given me that time, but they did, because I'm probably the strongest Christian who's going to be speaking there. Jim Mars is going to be there. There are going to be some way-out people, but most people, whether they be on the right or the left, conservative or Democrat, who have done any thinking, realize there's a conspiracy. They just differ as to what it is. And so it should be a fascinating time. It'll start early in the morning and go into late evening on both days, ending at 10 o'clock on Sunday. So if you'd like to go, why, of course, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. And, of course, go to their website at conspiracycon.com. That's conspiracycon.com. You'll learn a lot about it. And, of course, if you get your application in early, it's a lot cheaper than paying at the door. But that's the Memorial Day weekend. Get there early to hear my talk. And if you can't come, why, pray for me, because, believe me, we're going to be going into, a den of snakes in many respects. So then, of course, we want to mention, if you'd like to set up an Institute of the Constitution in your area, give them a call at 410-760-6759. That's 410-760-6759. And really take the time to set up an Institute of the Constitution. If people don't learn about the Christian heritage and foundation of this country, we're going to lose America. Don't sit around and complain. Here's something you can do: an excellent program, a 12-week program, and an extra program with David Barton. Call them at 410-760-6759. Set up an Institute of the Constitution. And then, of course, if you'd like to get one of our four tape sets, let me suggest, consider getting our tape on four tape set on the secret government. If you'd like a video, I would certainly consider getting our new video. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. You can get that by itself or with our new syllabus that'll give you all sorts of original documentation you'll never find out elsewhere. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for Iraq, the Untold Story, the video, or of course, the syllabus, or get the two together to decrease price. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and Bella, you've lit up the board. Our guest today is Bill Federer. His book, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on Law, and if you'd like to find out about getting it, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And the book, of course, is The Ten Commandments, Their Influence on American Law. And let's go to Fritz, who's calling here from... hi, Fritz. Are you from... Is this Fritz from Maine?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Question or comment?
Really, well, sort of a comment. It's a very complicated discussion. And one way to simplify it, if I plant a potato seed, I expect to get a potato, not a tomato. What we have now in the U.S. is just the opposite of what the Founding Fathers intended. Now, where did this come from? I think in the beginning we had certain bad strains. Even with the Founders, you had Tom Paine was atheist. Thomas Jefferson has to be construed as a very liberal Christian at best.
Okay, now, do you have a question, though, at all? Because we could go on a long talk on it. And if you've read my book, you know that there was a force of darkness here at the same time as the influence of Christianity. But do you have a question for
us? Yes, sir. I can frame it in the form of a question.
All right, fine.
Where did this belief that we can write that there is no natural law, that man is in charge of his own destiny and not God, and that's the prevailing, that permeates every aspect of our society. What is the origin of that? Where did that come from?
What's the origin of that, Bill? And I think that's a very, very insightful and important question. Where did that idea come from, that man could make his own, take his own positions and make his own laws independent of God?
Well, you know, Jesus said that let the wheat and tares grow together until the harvest. So the caller is correct that the tares that were there at the beginning. I want to comment one thing on a previous caller, because I looked it up. I have my book on CD-ROM, so I typed it in, pulled it up. It was Professor Donald Lutz and Charles Heinemann, and their work was The Relative Influence of European Writers on Late 18th Century American Political Thought, published in the American Science Review, and they revealed 15,000 writers of the founders and found out that 34% of their quotes were all taken from the Bible, and the majority of them from the book of Deuteronomy. So okay. I wanted to give the exact citation there.
All right, fine.
As far as the origins of the country, one of the things I found, in addition to quotes like from Thomas Jefferson, and it's funny that he would be the one to give the quote, he talks about the federal judiciary. And here, that's why the fight is so strong over the appointment of justices, because the three branches of government sort of leaves it. This is what Jefferson wrote in 1821 to Mr. Hammond. He said, "The germ of the disillusion of our federal government is in the federal judiciary, an irresponsible body working like gravity by night and day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless step like a thief over the field of jurisdiction, until all shall be usurped from the states." And you say, well, what do you mean usurped from the states? Well, back at the time of the founding, the state constitutions were the most important. You had a very large group of people that did not like the federal constitution. They thought it gave too much power to the federal government. We had 55 men wrote the federal constitution, but only 39 signed it. They go, why didn't the rest sign it? They didn't think it put enough limits on the power of the federal government. Then we had men like Patrick Henry and Samuel Adams that were against the Constitution. Why? Because they didn't think it put enough limits on the power of the federal government. So the ones that were promoting the Constitution wrote the Federalist Papers, and they convinced the states that in the first session of Congress they'd put 10 handcuffs on this new federal government. We call them the 10 Amendments or the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law regarding the establishment of religion, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or taking away the right to freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and so forth. Anyway, after the Civil War, the federal government began to usurp power from the state governments. And so the state constitutions didn't mean that much anymore. I mean, I come out right frankly and say the reason the federal constitution says little about religion is not because religion was unimportant, but because religion was so very important, they wanted to keep it under the local state's jurisdiction. Sort of like local control of the school board, local control of the fire department, it was local control over religion. And indeed, every one of the original states had God all throughout their constitutions. I mean, some of them, like South Carolina, as it says that there's complete religious toleration for every person in the state that adheres to a Protestant denomination. And then they changed it a few years later to a Christian denomination.
Okay. Let me just quickly get on. We've got a board full of people here. First of all, Fritz, you asked where this dark side came from. It started in the Garden of Eden when the serpent said, be your own God. And that's really, it's been going on ever since.
Yeah. Can I just make one recommendation? You're absolutely right. Everybody get the book, The Politics of Bad Faith by David Horowitz, and he explains the origins of the left, the meaning of left and right. And you look on page 137, and he'll explain to you where it came from. Social utopianism, the idea that man can control the world without God's help. He'll explain to you where he where that idea comes from.
Yeah, but it comes right from the Garden of Eden. Thanks so much, Fred.
Okay, sure.
Okay,
yeah, David Horowitz is a great writer.
Right.
I've met him and read his stuff. I like him.
Well, let's go. Let's see. Is this Barry we have? Or is this Tom? Barry or Tom? Who's
Barry.
There? Who?
This is Barry from Michigan.
Okay, Barry from Michigan. Go ahead. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I do, and it's a kind of a strange question, but it's a two-parter. First of all, is your guest going to run again in, what was it, Missouri?
Yes, he's going to run for the seat there that is held today by Dick Gephardt.
Right, okay, that's right, okay, good. And number two, and this is sort of strange, but I read a lot of the book, or I should say a quarter of Mr. Federer's book, and here's my question. How do you attribute, like, the prayers in your book or some of the quotes or affirmations to God by people, for instance, like Harry Truman, when he was an avowed Mason, and, you know, some people say he was actually instrumental in getting us involved in World War II.
All right, fine. I don't know about World War II, but maybe the Korean War, certainly. He was in the Senate at that time. But how do you, the question by Tom, I'm sorry, by Barry, is certainly we talk about Harry Truman talking about God, but he was an avowed Mason. So how do you really put the two together, Christianity and Masonry?
As far as their quotes go, it's a reflection on either them and their sincere beliefs, or it's a reflection on the nation, that the nation so believed in God that the politician felt like he needed to put God in his speech in order to...
That's a very good explanation.
...accepted by the nation. And so either way, it reflects on the fact that we were a more religious country if the president felt like he needed to put that rhetoric into his speech. Now, I can't judge on the faith of, you know, really any of them, other than their actions. I can say that, by and large, they had a Judeo-Christian world view. Now, whether they actually were what we would consider evangelical Christians today, many of them, it's up for grabs. You know, Jefferson, Franklin, and so forth. But they had a Judeo-Christian world view. By that, I mean they believed that, number one, God existed. Number two, he was a monotheistic God. It wasn't the Greek deities, you know. Number three, that we were accountable to him in another life. And then, you know, they believed in the resurrection. Even Ben Franklin, the deist, on his gravestone said that, like an old book whose cover has been torn, this person believes that he'll come back in a more revised edition, you know, revised by the author, you know. So they believed in Judeo-Christian concepts. I mean, it wasn't, you know, Indian reincarnation. It wasn't, you know, Muhammad, where you go to heaven and you have a harem full of wives and so forth. So they may or may not have been Christian, but they definitely had a Judeo-Christian worldview. And also, what was liberal back then, you know, Jefferson was a liberal back then. What was liberal back then, today the liberals have gotten so liberal that it makes Jefferson and those people look conservative. I mean, they at least believe in God. You go to the Jefferson Memorial in D.C., all four sides of that memorial, he mentions God. And, you know, this judge taking God out of the pledge in California, Jefferson himself, the author of the separation of church and state phrase, he says, what security can there be for life, for liberty, if we have removed their only security, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God? And so here's Jefferson saying that our liberties are the gift of God, and if we remove God, there's no security for these liberties, and this judge is using Jefferson's word to take God out.
That's really so true. And, you know, if you study Jefferson and the Declaration of Independence, you realize that he used all these phrases from other Christian writers, whether it be John Locke, Samuel Rutherford. All of these phrases that he used actually came from other different Christian writers. He was writing from, certainly, from a Christian worldview. And, of course, people would try to use Jefferson's, some of the statements to discredit the Declaration of Independence, which is really sort of the birth certificate of the Constitution, because they hate America. And yet, of course, if you understand the origins of the Declaration, where the phrase natural law, nature's God, and nature's law came from, they were Lockonian, as was the phrase life, liberty, and property. Well, let's go to Tom calling from Florida. Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Are you a Mason?
No.
Wait a minute. What is your background? Why are you asking that?
Well, I always ask everybody that. I want to know.
Oh, see, fine. Okay, fine. I'm not a Mason either. Any question? Do you have a question at all that, you know, is not sort of inflammatory?
What do you mean inflammatory? What are you talking about?
Okay, fine. Thanks so much. And let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Just a question or two. Since Eisenhower put the "In God We Trust" on dollar bill, and he spoke of the importance of God and the Supreme Being, how are we sure that he was referring to the God of the Bible?
Well, there's lots of quotes where he specifically refers to the Bible, and I've got those in my book, America's God and Country, and also on the CD-ROM, American Quotations. And let me just pull up a quote that where we're talking here. One of the things that Eisenhower did when he was given a speech is he said, if you... Any person that has the flag in one hand and the Bible in the other is a patriot and should be given the freedom here. There's five different quotes where Eisenhower mentions the Bible. This is the one I referred to. This was in a speech he gave on November 4th, 1954. Eisenhower said, "Now any group that binds itself together to awaken all of us to these simple things and to discover new ways and means by which they are brought home to us, and through our peering into the future, any organization such as this, in my mind, a dedicated patriotic group that can well take the Bible in one hand and the flag in the other and march ahead." And then in 1954, Eisenhower said again, "The purpose of a devout and united people was set forth in the pages of the Bible. One, to live in freedom. Two, to work in a prosperous land. Three, to obey the commandments of God. The biblical story of the promised land inspired the founders of America. It continues to inspire us." You know, again, and then when he was he wrote this talking about his family, he said, "As a child, I practically had to memorize the Bible when I was a kid." And I put in here his family belonged to the Brethren in Christ, which was a simple Quaker faith. His grandfather was Reverend Jacob E. Eisenhower. They were... you could tell that the God he was talking about was the Judeo-Christian God.
Okay, one reason I ask is because if he went so far as to have that put on dollar bill, "In God We Trust," why didn't he go further and take off the Illuminati symbol from the back?
I don't know. I don't know if he even knew what it was. Do you think he did?
No, and there's still confusion, you know, today in most people's minds. They don't understand all that stuff. But, the wheat and tares thing that I'd mentioned earlier, you know, some of that stuff the Illuminati started in
1776, May 1st, 1776.
And by the way, I have a quote. There's a set of books called The Annals of America, and it has all, it's printed by Encyclopedia Britannica, and it has in it speeches, great speeches from all the great, you know, founders, and there was one from the president of Yale.
Yeah, Timothy Dwight. Right, right.
And in it, Timothy Dwight mentions the Illuminati. I mean,
we actually offer that to our listeners. We have copies of that. A fascinating
speech. This is what he said. I just pulled up my computer.
Okay.
Says, while these measures were advancing, he says, Dr. Adam Weishaupt, professor of canon law at University of Ingolstadt, Bavaria, Germany, formed about the year 1977 the Order of the Illuminati. And it says the societies of the Illuminati were taught to strike at the root of all human happiness and virtue. This possession of property, pronounced robbery, chastity and natural affection were declared to be nothing more than groundless prejudices. But he goes on how their goal is to overthrow governments and through overthrowing religion and getting a hold of the arts and the educational establishment. Well, Dr. Stan's the expert on it, so this is just a quote.
Who made the quote from the guy from Yale?
Timothy Dwight.
Timothy Dwight. He was the president of Yale.
And what year was that? It was in a speech he gave in 1798, mm-hmm. July 4th, in New Haven, titled The Duty of Americans at the Present Crisis, Illustrated in a Discourse.
It's actually, we include that in our Millennium Syllabus, or Mike, if you want a copy of that, we'll be glad to get it for you. Have it.
My main concern was that it was pre-Skull and Bones.
Oh, yeah, well, long before. Okay, anything else, Mike?
That's all, thanks.
Okay, thanks so very much. Well, Bill, when you came on, why, we certainly lit up the board, so we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
Well, the book I put together is The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law. What I did is historically go through and show from our laws, the court decisions, I mean, the orders of George Washington to his troops where he forbade blasphemy, you know. The Fourth Commandment, keep holy the Sabbath. It says the 1682 Pennsylvania Constitution says, if any business shall fall on the first day of the week, commonly called the Lord's Day, business shall be deferred to the following day. Well, that influenced our U.S. Constitution, where it says that if any business, the president has so many days to sign a bill, Sunday is accepted before the bill becomes law. So our federal Constitution today acknowledges that no business is done on a Sunday. The precedent for that is the Fourth Commandment.
Well, we're going to have to let you go. How much is the book?
It's $20.
All right, we'll be carrying it
through Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. We'll be carrying it. Bill, thank you so very much for being with us. God bless you. Look forward to having you on our other programs in the near future. Bye-bye.
Great to be with you.
And, of course, Bill is one of my favorite guests. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, I just want to mention some of the other products we carry, and we hope you'll want to get. One of them would be the Miracle 2 soap products, and certainly the Miracle 2 soap is a soap and a moisturizing soap, sort of foamy, moisturizes your skin. There's a neutralizer, there is a lotion, there's a gel, and we certainly advocate you try them. We can't make any medical claims for them, although I will tell you that many of the people who use them have all sorts of uses for them. And if you'd like more information, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll tell you how other people have used them, and all you can do is try to see if they work for you. And we have a special introductory offer, and of course we have an awful lot of very happy users. If you'd like to know more, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. That's Miracle 2 Soap Products. Then, of course, if you'd like to get the book we were just talking about, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on Law, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We hope if you have children or grandchildren, many of you will give serious consideration to getting a phonopoly set so they can learn to read phonetically and spell phonetically and pronounce words phonetically. And, of course, it's a board game played like Phonopoly, but it's really loads of fun. And in 16 hours or more, 16 to 20 hours, where you can reprogram their minds so that they can actually begin to read as they should rather than the dumbing down methods that have been used. It's 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books. Phonopoly, $139.95 plus shipping. Most of the programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for Phonopoly. And then, of course, we carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. Actually, it's a complete high school curriculum. It takes you from grammar school through high school graduation. All your textbooks are there, your lesson plans, your lessons, your textbooks. The only thing you have to buy separate are the Saxon math textbooks, and you can get those at a 20% reduction through Dr. Robinson's organization. The Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is $199, and we think it's a great deal. So if you'd like to get this, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ask if the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, I guess it's $199.95, but we think it really is a wonderful thing, a wonderful means of raising your child up in the ways of our Lord and get them out of government schools. Again, it's the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, and give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV. War. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I just once again mentioned if you'd like to get a copy of that book, The Ten Commandments, Bill Federer's book, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you're interested in getting either a Big Berkey or a Berkey Light, a water filter or water purifier, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you get it through us, of course, you're going to get with it either one of our videos or one of our four tape sets of your choice. And we think it's important to have something like this on hand, and we've got ours up and running at the present time. And then, of course, this is the time I really need to remind our listeners that we are primarily listener-supported. We're dependent on those of you who listen to us on a regular basis, who believe in what we're trying to do. And that is educate people about the spiritual aspect of the battle in which we're engaged. So if you actually would like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. But more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America on radio. And now we're about 55 outlets every week. Not as many as I wish there were, but certainly we're beginning to reach more and more people. Our Saturday program is heard on 35 communities across America, some of the major communities. I just wish we could have 20 times that much. And, you know, as time goes by, hopefully we will. But, of course, a lot of the ministries are having trouble today because we are in a recession, and I fear it's going to get worse. So we hope that if you're already a supporter, you can continue. If you're not, you could seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our March newsletter, it will tell you the true story of what really happened in Iraq, why we went into Iraq, and it's entirely different than you've been told by the controlled media. And, of course, this was long-range planning. The war was planned back in 1997. I'm going to give you the references where you can go, where you can prove what I'm saying is right. Or maybe you can prove what I'm saying is wrong. But at least accept my challenge. If you'd like a free copy of the March newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope that you'll tell others about our radio programs, tell us about our website. Our website is radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. You can go there. You can listen to our programs on the Internet 5 hours every day, either directly the archive programs, or certainly you can link to the other networks that we're on. And we hope, of course, that you'll pull down our programs, you'll listen to them. It will help you to understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a cultural, ideological, educational, economic, ideological battlefield. And the trouble is most people don't understand the true nature of our battle, which is why we're losing. So if you'd like to, of course, to help us, remember again our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. If you haven't seen our latest video, Iraq, the Untold Story, or got our syllabus, which has all sorts of documents in it, you will never find elsewhere, give us a call. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we truly are at war today. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. We ask you to pray for revival, because if America doesn't turn back to God, why, God is certainly going to turn his back on America. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan saying, may the Lord be with you.
What's that?
I said that was a pretty good program.
Well, I thought it was, yeah. How are you coming to the transient to help? Are you going to get that thing ready or you want to bring it back to me?
I already brought it back to you.
Oh, you did? Okay, fine.
Yeah, that was okay. Almost a year ago.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Nobody ever dealt with me.
Yeah, actually, I think I brought it back to Brian and Margaret.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she probably...
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm keeping it for herself.
Yeah.
Well, you got her one.
A year and a half.
Yeah, hi, Mary. Look, we're offering a book called The Ten Commandments for Influence on American Law by William Federer, and it's 1995, okay?
Good
morning,
program today.
American Law by Bill Kennedy.